This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you so much for joining us today. As usual, we're going to have an interesting show. We've got one of our regular guests with us, Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. They're a geopolitical consulting firm and analytical firm, and they provide information to Fortune 500, to government agencies, and everyone else on what's going on around the world. Fred, thank you for joining us on Fed Access.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
You know, always an interesting topic, and today I know there's a lot going on in the world, but let's talk about what's going on in the border and what's happening in Mexico. I know you guys put some reports out about the meth connection, about stuff that's going on in Honduras that's related to Mexico, the stuff that's going on with China related to Mexico. A lot of stuff to talk about. What's happening? What's your read on current situations in Mexico and our border issues with narcotics and everything else?
It's really a very challenging issue, not only for our homeland security efforts, but predominantly for the states that border Mexico, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. For example, last night there was a raging gun battle in Nuevo Laredo, which is right across the border from Laredo, and we're getting some raw intelligence in that upwards of even 20 people may have been killed in Nuevo Laredo, and this was the result of Mexican military actions against a drug trafficking organization. And it seems, as we study this phenomenon, there's no shortage of this kind of chaos and violence every day, and it's very easy to become numb or insensitive to just the sheer body count that's surfacing there. It's very easy to have that attitude, well, this is just another killing, this is just another death. There's no shortage of these kinds of firefights breaking out throughout the country, and of course we've got the election coming up in Mexico. And then as you look at these transnational criminal organizations, Derek, you have Mexican cartels with clearly their network into the United States, but also organized crime activities that reach into Central and Latin America, as well as into Chinese organized crime, which is just kind of fascinating from just the global network. So this is an issue that impacts upon us all.
You know, you just mentioned several different things, and now with the whole organized, it seems as if, and tell me if I'm correct, what you're seeing, Fred, that, you know, as we're kind of winding down off Afghanistan, we're winding down off of Iraq and everything else, some of the agencies are starting to refocus their attention towards organized crime. I know FBI is starting to redirect a little bit, you know, not necessarily taking completely off terrorism, but now redirecting a little bit more towards organized crime, trafficking, drugs, and everything else. But we're seeing that Mexico seems to be the doorway into the United States. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, certainly. And if you look at it from the standpoint of economics, you have our largest trading partner. You have the very hot-button issues such as the immigration aspect that comes into play. And then you look at this just sheerly from the scope of violence that's occurring on our continent in a nation that we share a common border. Now, again, we are much more attuned to this issue here, being a Texas-based company, but as I travel around the country, Derek, and I do either talks or book signings and so forth, and folks ask me, well, why should we care about this problem in Washington, D.C. or in Colorado Springs? And the reason you should is simply because if you look at your homicide rate in your city from drug and gang violence, you're going to find that the predominant number are associated with that. I think it was in Chicago over the weekend where there were 7 killed and I think approximately 40 people injured and just gang violence.
Wow. You know, it is a dynamic of the drug trafficking and the gang violence. You know, I mean, we hear about sometimes the Mexican Marines had confronted a cartel, this, that, and the other. Has there been any weakening of these cartels, or are they just getting stronger and stronger in Mexico? And then what is the reason, you know, everybody will always blame America because they say, well, you know, because America wants the demand. They have the demand for the drugs. That's why it's so, you know, these cartels are so strong. I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, there's no doubt there's two issues there. And this is the 1,000-pound gorilla that nobody wants to deal with. And that's the consumption problem here in the United States. When we meet with Mexican academics and security and law enforcement personnel, they'll consistently tell you that if you did not have the demand problem in the United States and Canada, we would not have the issues that we have unfolding in Mexico. And I agree with him there, but I don't see anybody sitting back here in the United States dealing with that issue. And everybody wants to make this a law enforcement border security issue. But there is the demand issue that's fueling a lot of this violence. And then, of course, you have the weapons issue, as we've seen with the ATF Fast and Furious fiasco, that weapons flowing from the United States into Mexico certainly contribute to this phenomenon.
And Fred, I mean, are these weapons that are being made by U.S. manufacturers? I mean, you know, understanding the scope of it when people hear about it, like weapons, you know, leaving from the United States, are these weapons being made by U.S. weapon manufacturers? And then, you know, somehow they get on the market and get into the black market and then get shipped over to Mexico? Is this how this is happening? How is this happening?
Well, as you look at the weapons issue, and again, it's a really fascinating phenomenon as you look at this, it's a hydra, Derek. In essence, you'll find a lot of U.S. military ordnance that have been either sold or transferred to the Mexican government or to many of your Central and Latin American governments, and then they're either stolen or sold into the organized crime network, so they're coming up through the Central and Latin America channels. Here in, for example, Texas, we'll see home invasions for the specific purposes of stealing weapons, and then those are transported by criminal gangs into Mexico. So it really ranges across the whole spectrum from government-to-government sales and common home invasions where weapons are stolen and brought into Mexico. For example, in one of my recent meetings with the Mexican government, their analysis indicates that the bulk of the weapons that they're seeing turn up in firefights in Mexico are stolen from various burglaries in the Houston area. Now, I have no way to independently corroborate that information, and I have a pretty good working relationship with these folks. I have no doubt that that's probably true. Simply put, there's no shortage of weapons in Mexico.
Is that, well, I know Texas is pretty liberal with weapons, and I guess that makes it a good target. I mean, a lot of the border states, you know, with Texas or Arizona, do have a lot of people who have weapons, and I guess that makes it even more of a prime target for these gangs and home invasions.
Well, certainly, I think that when you look at this from just the volume of weapons that are sold in Texas on any given day, and then you look at our proximity and closeness from the sheer standpoint of the commonality with the border. And, you know, most people don't understand the size of the border. I mean, we have just in Texas alone, it's 1,400 miles in two time zones. And there's a lot of ways to get weapons south. And then the other aspect with weapons, Derek, are bulk cash, meaning, remember, you've got the drug proceeds coming north, and then you have the stolen weapons and the bulk cash going south, as well as a tremendous number of stolen vehicles. You know, the bulk of the vehicles used by the cartels in Mexico and the gangs are stolen vehicles from the United States.
With that, you know, I want to touch on that, but you mentioned something about the dynamic of demand and law enforcement saying this is a demand issue. You know, Fred, do you think that, and a lot of people are talking about kind of the legalization of drugs. I mean, do you think that that's a solution? You know, the legalization of some drugs and kind of how we had prohibition and alcohol, then legalized alcohol. Do we need to change the conversation into more of that of a conversation rather than more of a law enforcement issue?
I think we need better thinking on this from a strategic perspective. I really have come to the belief here after following this for so many years that we almost need a Manhattan Project kind of process here, where we're looking at some strategic solutions, not only bringing in the demand issue, how are we going to stop the demand here in the United States, but combined with that, what are we going to do with border security issues? Because at this point in time, the border is so porous and so large that the sheer scope of drugs coming in, even if you had some sort of drug awareness solution here, would be prohibitive because the drugs are still going to flow every day. For example, some of the statistics that I've seen, and again, this is fuzzy math, and there's huge intelligence gaps on this issue. And you know this from being in the military, how vulnerable you are when you have intelligence gaps.
Right.
That some of the figures I've seen are that we're only interdicting anywhere between 15 and 20% of all drugs as well as all human trafficking coming into the United States. So as you do the math, if you look at our return on investment so far, it's really not been very good at all.
Wow. You know, I want to keep on talking about this. We need to take a quick break. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence of Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. They're a geopolitical analytical firm that puts out information all the time about things that's going on around the world. But today we're talking about Mexico and our border issues. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you want to, you can make yourself pretty hard to find in a Jeep Compass. For starters, you can put some serious off-road miles behind you, thanks to its available trail-rated 4x4 capability with Freedom Drive 2 off-road package. Meanwhile, you have the added confidence of more than 30 available safety and security features, and the added benefit of up to 29 miles per gallon highway. Not to say it would be impossible to find you after all that, but it would probably take another compass to do it.
Say hello to summer with 0% APR financing, plus $500 bonus cash, or get $1,500 in total cash allowances when you finance a 2012 Jeep Compass. So get to your local Jeep dealer today, based on EPA estimates. Financing for well-qualified buyers through Ally Financial. Not all buyers will qualify. Residency restrictions apply. Offers end July 2nd, 2012. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC.
Pooling together really rewards. Van pools have now been added to the popular Pool Rewards program. If you currently drive alone to work and can carpool at least 2 days a week or form a new van pool, you may qualify for a cash incentive or reduced commuting costs. Visit CommuterConnections.org. Click on Pool Rewards to find out more. Need to find others to rideshare with? Commuter Connections provides free ride matching services too. Pool Rewards. It pays to rideshare. Some restrictions apply. Visit CommuterConnections.org today to get started.
And I can just read on the plane without any problem. Like now, when I'm on the airplane and somebody has a Kindle, they either have to turn on the light because a Kindle doesn't have any light built into it, or they also have these little small lights that clamp onto the side of the Kindle that lights it up because the Kindle is not a backlit screen. On the other hand, when I go to the swimming pool and there's bright sunlight, I cannot use the iPad.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Here's Tony Leone, VMware Federal Business Development Specialist for GovConnection, on a recent client virtualization solutions panel discussion sponsored by GovConnection, HP, and VMware.
One of the things that desktop virtualization can offer is a longer lifecycle out of those products. Instead of having to worry about what is the most current processor, will it work with these applications? Because we're consolidating that into the data center and just delivering a screen scrape or display to that end user, we can get a longer lifecycle out of those universal laptops. Now it's no longer in 3 years or 2.5 years or whatever your life cycle refresh rate is, can we potentially double that?
VMware View helps federal IT leaders comply with the Telework Enhancement Act, meet COOP initiatives, and solve the access control dilemma. HP Thin clients have been certified to work with VMware View Manager. This end-to-end solution allows you to simplify desktop management, reduce costs, improve data protection, and promote compliance. GovConnection is your one-stop resource for all of your IT projects. Visit govconnection.com/federalVDI for more details today.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Pissarro as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're having an interesting conversation about what's going on our border. With all the conversations about elections and immigration issues, sometimes the border security issue sometimes falls flat in the news, and sometimes what's going on in Mexico with the drug cartels. We hear about it, but sometimes we're not taking that serious as we should, and today we're talking about it. Have with us Fred Burton. He's a vice president of intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com, but they're a geopolitical analytical firm that focuses in on this and many other issues around the world. Fred, you know, we were just kind of talking about you kind of mentioned the Manhattan Project is needed for kind of, you know, dealing with border security and other things. And people hear about the amount of money that goes into customs and border protection, border patrol, and that we're now, looking at, you know, some people have made that we need a big fence around the United States almost to control these borders. You know, is there any solution that's coming out? I mean, is it drones? Is there more, you know, technical stuff? Is there anything to do that we can really control this border, you know, where we do have these large gaps?
Well, I think there's certainly some smarter solutions than what we have been doing. For example, I know here in Texas, the state has been very good about intelligence-led policing, and under the Department of Public Safety and the Texas Rangers, stepping in and filling some of the gaps that are wide open that Customs and Border Patrol and the U.S. Border Patrol Agency are not filling. And then you look into the technology arena. The challenge has always been one of bandwidth, of that the border is so big and so remote in certain areas. How do you protect it? Well, there are technology solutions for that, but then you don't have a lot of boots on the ground, so to speak, on a practical level. So if you see smugglers that come across, if you talk to some of the Texas ranchers, which we do, a large amount of the border is in private hands, which a lot of folks don't realize. The farther you get away from the border, it's in private ranch hands.
Okay.
And there's just horrific stories that you hear that really never make the media on some of the crimes that take place and just the human trafficking aspect that these poor ranchers are dealing with all, you know, pretty much every day. And it is kind of scary, you know, and there's more and more violent crime. And then you get into the political aspects of this, Derek, which are horrendous when you start, how are you going to define spillover crime? For example, if a criminal gang in Houston or Dallas commits a homicide and there is drug violence associated with it, or perhaps they are illegal aliens, is that a spillover crime? Well, it depends on how you define spillover crime. And there is no common definition of spillover crime. Drones are useful when it comes to helping you fulfill some of those intelligence gaps. But getting that tactical data down to an interdiction effort is always the challenge. And then you have, as usual, your turf issues between the states and the federal government, much like we had before 9/11. So the border is can best be described from a law enforcement or a homeland security effort is a kludge. There's a lot of moving parts. At times, there's not a lot of coordination. And you still have tremendous amount of drugs flowing into the United States. So I think it's time for a strategic look at this and factoring in all the cultural issues, all the drug awareness issues, and policy issues, and whether or not do we legalize certain drugs. You know, these are the kinds of issues that needs to be looked at, I think.
Sure. Is the reason why it's so tough to look at it because this is such a hot button for politicians that no one really wants to touch it? I mean, is that the truth of it, Fred? I mean, you're talking about so many important issues, and you even just hit on something that I didn't know about, that parts of the border are controlled by private hands. So if you did have a private person, and you know, then the Border Patrol or Customs Border Protection may not be able to put personnel on that land if it's controlled by private people, or at least keep unless they have some kind of agreement with somebody. But is that why we can't get to some resolution on this?
There's a tremendous amount of politics involved with this, Derek, and you can't seem to separate the homeland security issues from the immigration issue. You can't seem to get people on one sheet of music. And I've really come to the conclusion, and after following this for quite some time, that absent some sort of catastrophic event that's directly linked back to the border, there's really not a lot of will. Mm-hmm. On the U.S. part, either by elected officials or organizations such as DHS, to really do something about this. And so short of that, I think it's just another day in the life of those saddled with monitoring this. But I tell you where it really impacts, and this is another issue, is we have huge corporate clients here at Stratfor, and every day they are asking us about the drug violence is taking place because they have huge manufacturing operations in places like Monterrey or Juarez. And then you have like what occurred last night with this firefight in Nuevo Laredo. This is a major border point crossing into the United States. You could hear gunfire from Laredo. And so it disrupts the supply chain of manufacturing. So this is a real hot button in a lot of corporate boardrooms around the United States as they are consistently evaluating this, because most people just simply don't want to travel to do basic work there, such as auditing or just CEO visits. So underneath all the categories of this is the ramifications to the multinational corporations.
You know, you just mentioned something. I was about to bring that up. We were kind of on the same page at the same time, because to me, the big impact is the economic impact. You know, if you have a situation where corporations, you know, U.S. corporations cannot expand, or, you know, now can't put products or services into an area because they feel unsafe, I mean, that could possibly have an impact on, you know, jobs in America. You know, I mean, so to say, you know, I mean, does that make sense? I mean, if you got these corporations because the situation is so vulnerable, you got corruption, you know, you're being threatened by the cartels, your people may get killed, then that has an impact on whether you can make money or not.
Absolutely. And it's one that I think by last count, issues involving ramifications, the business community, are our number one call on Mexico. For example, we push out that kind of violence to the corporations because they're assessing on a day-to-day basis how much does this cost? And then they're looking at what is the cost of protecting our facilities? What is the cost of not being allowed to send our CEO in because the risk is too great? What is the cost of Department of Justice interest in things such as the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act? And, you know, is my manager in country X paying a bribe in order for us to do business here? And when is the Department of Justice going to come after me? So these are the kinds of issues that weigh heavily in the boardrooms.
You know, and with all of that, are we in a situation, because, I mean, that also involves a whole different dynamic. You've got the kidnapping insurance, you've got all these other kind of different things, and the cartels and everybody, they know about this stuff. And so these industry leaders can become targets because they can be a target of either corruption or they can be a target of kidnapping.
Absolutely. And in essence, I don't know a lot of multinational corporations, at least the ones we deal with, and we do work for the bulk of the Fortune 500s that are even authorizing their corporate CEO or their senior leadership to travel into Mexico. And then most of the companies there are just operated with local nationals, and they're just really minimizing that, or they're staging employees on the U.S. side of the border and transporting them in and out every day.
Wow. Wow. Let's take a quick break, Fred. When we come back, I want to, you know, you got this article about the Honduras connection. I want to kind of talk about what's going on in Honduras, Colombia, Venezuela, and things like that, about the drug traffic coming through those areas and getting funneled up to the United States. What are we looking at? We'll take a quick break. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president of intelligence for Stratfor. You can find him at Stratfor.com. They're a geopolitical and analytical firm. They focus in on many issues. But today we're talking about Mexico and border security with the United States. We'll be right back after this break.
Recently, United Healthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. United Healthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are United Healthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. United Healthcare.
And now, on the home front, sponsored by your local Jeep dealers.
Have a son or daughter deployed, a husband or wife? As hard as it may sound, don't make the fact that your loved one is far away the central fact in your life. That advice from a Marine mom who knows the ups and downs and the difficulty of dealing with a loved one at war. So how do you accomplish that? Well, Kathy says take good care of yourself. Your service member wouldn't want you to revolve your life around them being gone. Eat right, exercise, find creative outlets or hobbies, read some good books, volunteer, and make sure to visit with loved ones when you can. Moms also say ditch negative people in your life. You don't need them around while dealing with such a stressful deployment. Instead, surround yourself with loving, positive people and don't feel guilty about having fun. You can take that little getaway or trip to break up the long deployment. Your service member will be glad you did.
Make tracks to your local Jeep vehicle dealer today and take advantage of an exciting military cash allowance on the full line of legendary Jeep vehicles. And Jeep wants to express its extreme gratitude and pride for your military service.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. May I help you?
Yeah, my car's entertainment system just isn't cutting it.
Easy answer. Get an HD radio receiver, 100% free digital sound, digital traffic, and great music choices from your local HD2, HD3 radio stations.
Well, what brands do you have?
Best Buy has new expanded HD radio inventory, Alpine, Kenwood, Pioneer, JVC, with prices as low as $120.
Wow, an HD radio digital entertainment center? Show me the way. HD radio, more radio, more value.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Join us next Sunday, June 24th, where you'll find out how summer is singing. It's going to be singing at Terrera Vineyards. They're coming in to pour wine and sing some songs. And we have Chef Dennis Marin from Post coming in. He's going to tell us how his garden grows.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 right here on 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Heather Rosen, who is a franchise consultant with FranNet, and she'll talk about what you should look for when you're looking to purchase a franchise. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pettleman, located in Fairfax, and visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Recently, United Healthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. United Healthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row.
As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are United Healthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job, it's an honor. United Healthcare.
Welcome back to Fed Access. You're listening to Derek T. Dortch right here. We're talking to Fred Burton, and we are talking about issues that deal with border security and Mexico. Fred Burton is a vice president of intelligence at Stratfor. You can find their site at stratfor.com. They do a lot of analysis on a lot of geopolitical issues, a lot of security issues. And one issue they focus in on is what we're talking about today, which is Mexico and our border security and the drug trade and everything else that has an impact on us, the United States. Fred, you know, you've got an article and that caught my eye when I reached out to you guys about Honduras and other areas and this drug trade. What's going on in these other countries that's funneling up to Mexico and then funneling up to here?
Well, what you're looking at is a criminal umbrella or criminal organizations, which are predominantly run by the Mexican organized crime networks that are controlling the entire drug supply network throughout Central and Latin America. So you have countries such as Honduras, Guatemala, that are very active in the transport, the logistics, the entire drug flow. We've got a fabulous cartel map on our website that your listeners could look at that shows the actual nexus and the reach and how the drug moves, such as the ephedra from China into Mexico and how it comes up from the Caribbean into Guatemala and into Mexico, and just the whole logistical network, the supply chain of drugs, which is fascinating. Now, the interesting part as you look at this is the interactions between how the Mexican cartels, the drug trafficking organizations, interface with, let's say, Chinese organized crime. And then you start looking at this from a 30,000-foot level, and you think about it, and you say, well, how are the Mexicans actually working with the Chinese to get the drugs out of China? It's working, and it's very efficient. And if we're only interdicting 10, 15, 20%, it's certainly the kind of crime where they're, you know, the likelihood of getting caught is pretty small, and the likelihood of your return on investment is pretty big.
Fred, let me jump in real quick before you go on. Don't, and hold that point which you were just talking about. A lot of people don't hear about drugs coming from China. Is that because, you know, we hear about China being a threat militarily, we hear about China and other issues, but we don't really hear about drugs coming out of China and getting funneled into the United States. How big is that?
It's pretty big, and I would hold a lot of different institutions and government agencies feet to the fire on this. I think there's a tremendous amount of intelligence gaps on this issue. To be blunt, we only know what we know, meaning you only know based upon seizure rates, and you can only extrapolate out. The ephedra coming in, if you think of this in concept, with over 90%, anywhere between, I've seen 85 to 95% of all crystal meth is manufactured today in Mexico. So if you think of that in concept, this is the hub of all narcotics activity pushing into the United States. Absent certain heroin channels, such as Chinese heroin coming into California, Washington, Spokane areas, and then some flowing from Europe into, you know, the New York City, New Jersey areas. But as you look at this from a criminal enterprise perspective, you know, the seat of gravity, the center of gravity is the Mexican drug trafficking organizations, which also includes human trafficking, child prostitution, stolen cars, stolen weapons, stolen DVDs, anything you can imagine under a criminal enterprise.
You know, with all of that, and so we're talking about, you know, a very, very global situation. And what we're talking about is that the Chinese organized crime entities are starting to see that this, you know, and are they starting to link up with, like, the Zetas and everybody else? I mean, are we starting to see kind of collaboration between organized crime entities worldwide?
Absolutely. You're looking at certainly a hand-in-glove nexus relationship for the purposes of criminality. For example, we've seen evidence here in Texas and some of the other border states of white hate organizations such as the Aryan Brotherhood working with Mexican street gangs doing home invasions and carjackings and business makes strange bedfellows. So you have two groups.
I know that's an odd group that they the Aryans would probably usually hate them, but I guess because of economic reasons, they say, well, we can get in bed with them, huh?
Absolutely. And then if you look at an organization like the Zeta organization, last week we had several arrests by the DEA on a wonderful operation targeting the horse racing industry, where the New York Times did some fabulous reporting on this, where you're looking at some of the violent cartel bosses, such as Miguel Trevino of the Zeta organization, that heavily invested in the racehorse sector. And winning races here in the United States and laundering some of his money and proceeds through that. So any time you're looking at a cash business, whether it be the racehorsing business, bars, massage parlors, prostitution, you have a Mexican cartel nexus in there.
You know, with all of that and kind of going back to the Honduras dynamic, are we seeing an increase of this? I mean, because as we look at Mexico, is Honduras in the same dynamic where they don't have a government that can control these entities? I mean, are all these countries kind of in the same dynamic where there's not enough either military resources or law enforcement resources, or the cartels are just too powerful, and you can't really get a handle on it?
Well, you have systemic issues in some of these countries, Derek, such as corruption, you know, cartel influence in the political arena, you know, the cartel purchasing of intelligence or military officials that might control certain aspects of a port or a certain sector. It's, for example, you have several Mexican cartel high-value targets that live in Mexico, and there's a handful of them that you would have to think that on any given day we would have the capability to either reach out, arrest, grab, bring to justice, or target in some sort of drone strike like we're doing in Afghanistan. But for whatever reason, we're not. And there's serious ramifications for taking that kind of action. You have foreign policy ramifications. You have bilateral relations. And if you step back and think of this, what is the complexity of that? It's more complex with our relations. If the Mexican government is not unilaterally going to handle this problem, what do we do next? Well, so far we've been providing a lot of assistance and training and pouring money in, but where is that return on the investment?
Right, right. And I was just about to say that. I mean, we're pouring a lot of money into the problem, but it seems like the problem is not getting. It seems like the problem is getting worse rather than getting better. And I guess that's what everybody's concern is that it doesn't seem like the demand of drugs is going down. It doesn't seem like the deaths are going down. I mean, we hear about this all the time. I mean, even you have an article right here about the influence of the Zetas in Mexico with Morales and everything else. I mean, it just seems to really be escalating rather than be de-escalating.
And also there's a personal aspect here. We have a lot of missing Americans that have disappeared in Mexico. There's a lot of dual nationals that have disappeared. Now, granted, you're going to have some that have been associated with the drug trade, but not necessarily all of them. And then again, as you step back and think of this, you look at your city, Washington, D.C., look at your homicide rate in the city, and if you drill down and look at how many of them is fueled by drug violence, you know, is that a direct hand-in-glove relationship to the Mexican cartels in Mexico? Some could certainly argue that point because individuals are getting killed based on turf issues or drug deals gone bad. So as you look around the country, I mean, the city of Los Angeles, for example, I think they're up to almost 300 homicides this year. Chicago's up to 100. I don't know what it is for D.C. so far this year, but as you drill down into each and every one of them, you'll find that the majority are drug-related.
Right. I'm going to take a quick break, Fred. When we come back, I want to talk to you about, some people have been concerned about, is there a tie-in between terrorist organizations and the cartels, possibly terrorist organizations, since they're experts in smuggling, possibly smuggling in terrorists, most wanted people on a terrorist watch list or something like that, and can that be a threat to U.S. national security? We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find them at stratfor.com. We're talking about issues that deal with the border, narcotics issues, counter-narcotic issues, issues that deal with smuggling, human trafficking, and everything else that's going on with our borders and our border security. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
At Kaiser Permanente, we carefully select our doctors so you can carefully select your doctors. Our hiring process is so selective, only 1 in 10 doctors who apply make the cut. Yes, we're uber picky. Probably have a little perfectionism complex in there, but by putting our doctors under the microscope, we've discovered some of the greatest medical minds in their fields, and that's led to an even greater medical breakthrough. Drumroll, please. Award-winning care. We've received many of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, overall quality of care, and more. But we're not the only ones reaping the rewards. Because we carefully select our doctors, you have great doctors to choose from. And with all those great doctors, you think it'd be easy. But try choosing just one for your primary care doctor. We'll let you create your own highly selective process for that. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you thrive. Visit us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Central Michigan University has 7 centers right here in Metro D.C. Surprised? CMU has been educating Metro D.C. professionals since 1975, offering accredited adult-friendly degree programs designed for working professionals.
I feel so much better prepared now that I have this degree, and I feel that there is nothing that I cannot tackle.
Stay competitive with a quality degree from Central Michigan University in Metro D.C. Choose from degrees applicable to careers in administration, public sector leadership, healthcare, human resources, and more. Classes are forming now at our 7 Metro DC centers, including our new Alexandria Center. Go to cmich.edu/metrodc. That's cmich.edu/metrodc for more information. Or call 877-679-1268. Central Michigan University in Metro DC. Quality degrees, convenient formats, 7 local centers, certified operate by Chev.
Here's Dr. Madhu Agarwal, Deputy Undersecretary for Health for Policy and Service for the Veterans Health Administration, on the Gateway to Veterans Health and Wellness panel.
We take care of a lot of veterans with many chronic conditions. Those veterans would be coming to visit a clinic maybe 5 or 6 times a year. Majority of the time, they're taking care of their own conditions. To empower and to give them all the tools that are necessary so that they can successfully manage these conditions, My Healthy Vet is godsend.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
My Healthy Vet, VA's personal health record, helps veteran patients actively participate in their health and well-being. If you're a VA patient, consider upgrading your account today at myhealth.va.gov. With an upgraded account, veterans can securely access personal health records online 24/7. An upgraded account offers secure messaging, which strengthens the partnership between veterans and your healthcare team. To learn more, visit myhealth.va.gov. That's myhealth.va.gov. Take control of your VA healthcare. Here in the metro area, you'll find interesting people, top-notch restaurants, great sports teams, and plenty of monuments and museums. And here is where you'll find your next career, as a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. A career in the U.S. Coast Guard offers you stability, excellent federal benefits, and a flexible work schedule. So if you're looking for that next opportunity, consider the U.S. Coast Guard, where your career is how you serve. To find out more, visit the United States Coast Guard website at coastguardcivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
It is not every day you have access to the chief financial officer, but on July 19th, you'll have the opportunity to meet these key decision makers face to face. Come meet the top CFOs of our region at the Washington Business Journal's CFO of the Year Awards. Join us Thursday, July 19th at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington for a spectacular lunch and invaluable networking. Go to washingtonbusinessjournal.com/event to reserve your spot.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been having an interesting and enlightening show, I should say, because I've learned some stuff myself on this one that is talking about border security and talking about how do we deal with the issues of border security, especially with our border with Mexico. There are drugs coming in through Mexico, but coming in through a lot of different channels, through Honduras, organized crime through China, funneling things through Mexico. It's a bigger problem than sometimes the news or other areas may indicate. And we're talking about that today. We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the vice president of intelligence at Stratfor. And Stratfor is strategically placed in Austin, Texas. And so they know about this issue intimately. Fred, terrorism. You know, I mean, people have not been as concerned about it. We haven't had any attack on our inside our country in some time. We hear about certain people getting apprehended or being suspected about terrorist acts, but we haven't had any act that, you know, would draw any real attention. Is there a concern of a connection between cartels and terrorist organizations?
And that is the $1,000 question. That's one that's fascinating to discuss. For example, we recently had here in Austin, Texas, the roundup of several bar owners that were laundering money to the Hezbollah organization. And so you think of that in concept with the proximity to the border. And then you look at this in nexus to individuals that have been picked up either coming in or out of the United States through our southern border, and there's no shortage of examples of that. For example, we've picked up IRA members, Hamas members, Al-Qaeda members that have come either in or out, either way. And of course, the scary part, again, is if you think of this in concept, if we're only capturing or picking up a fraction of what could be occurring, we really have a lot of intelligence gaps on that. Now, I think that in fairness to, for example, the FBI, they have been doing a wonderful job in their undercover operations at ferreting out, you know, most of your lone wolf Al-Qaeda types, you know, through very good cyber monitoring of these individuals that are in these jihadi chat rooms and so forth. I think they really should be applauded for their efforts. They've stopped a lot of attacks. And so has cities such as New York City, based on some of their unilateral actions. But again, I think that we don't know what we don't know. We see relationships within the criminality arena of money laundering predominantly, stolen cars with the cartel kind of terrorism nexus, money laundering with Hezbollah, stolen cars. So it's more in the financial crimes aspect, because the United States is the cash cow for organizations like Hamas or Hezbollah.
You know, with what you just said, and given the dynamic of, like you indicated, the cash cow, where so much money is being funneled through here because there is so much money either being made here or otherwise, with all of that, and you mentioned the FBI, and I was going to talk to you. Is there a joint effort, or are you seeing this being disjointed? I mean, are you seeing the law enforcement agency? I know you kind of led to this a little bit earlier, but are you seeing them working together, the federal, state, local, county agencies really kind of putting together a task force, or do you still see a disjointed effort of information sharing? We have the fusion centers now. I mean, how connected is this thing? And also, you know, we have the program like InfraGuard and other things like that. I mean, how important is the private sector, you know, private security firms? I mean, firms like yourself or even corporations who have chief security officers, how much, you know, are they in importance into the effort?
I think it's all a very comprehensive effort that has been successful if you look at what's transpired since 9/11, as you step back and look at this. Sure, there's been their hiccups with DHS and TSA and other entities anytime you're dealing with government agencies, and there is a lot of duplication of efforts. For example, you take Washington, D.C., you have a Joint Terrorism Task Force, and you have a fusion center, and you pretty much have those in every major city around the United States. And if you look at some of the fusion centers, specifically as you look south and west, a large number of them are engaged in criminal kind of entities. They're doing criminal analysis on organized crime, criminal gangs, and so forth. And the Joint Terrorism Task Forces under the FBI are operationally looking for those Al-Qaeda types or the Unabomber or your next Timothy McVeigh that carried out the attack on Oklahoma City. So the JTTFs and the fusion centers, depending upon personalities and turf and locations, sometimes share a lot and sometimes they don't share at all. So you do have a very disparate kind of response. And as you look at some of the fusion centers around the country, which fall under the DHS, there's also a very disparate response as to who participates in those. Sometimes you'll have local police or university police with FBI. Sometimes you won't have them at all. So there's a lot of challenges there. But as you look at this from just the prevention of domestic acts of terrorism, so I think you have to take your hat off to the FBI for being very effective. Have they stepped on toes in carrying out those missions? Well, sure they have, but historically the FBI has always stepped on toes, but right, at least yeah. they're carrying out their mission.
Right. Do we need this to be an issue? I mean, will it get more importance? This is something that the president, whoever it is, is that something they have to really, really take it to heart and put this in front of the American people for it to begin getting the attention that it needs to get? How do we start putting this attention on it so people will start taking it serious?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not too optimistic that you're going to get anybody in Washington to focus on this, especially coming into an election year, Derek.
Right.
I've worked around enough administrations to know that, that's all that matters at this moment in time is the upcoming election. And I think as you look at some of these agencies, there's some historical problems that causes a lot of this dysfunction. You have DEA and ATF and the FBI, the 1,000-pound gorillas in this effort. And historically, they really don't like each other.
And their missions kind of overlap sometimes. I mean, they're all dealing...
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so you always will have those kinds of turf issues, but that's just the way that our country's law enforcement and federal agencies are designed. But I think at the end of the day, if you could get DHS to focus on all these different kinds of disparate issues, which I'm not too optimistic will occur, you could have some better efforts and some better program kind of missions. I know, for example, the state of Texas has done some wonderful things, kind of herding all the cats and getting all the locals involved. And at times, they don't get a lot of federal support. I know, for example, Governor Perry in Texas has had a standing request for 3,000 U.S. National Guard troops for the better part of 3-4 years now, and that's never been answered. And that's just for Texas alone. So there's a cost factor there. You know, I'm sure DOD will say, well, maybe they can't afford it, DHS doesn't want to pick up the cost. But at the end of the day, the National Security Council exists to kind of referee these kinds of fights. And is it going to be made a national priority? So far, it hasn't been.
Right, right. Well, hopefully conversations like this will maybe bring more attention to it. Fred, as usual, thank you for the insight. And we will definitely have to catch up to you in the next month or two and just kind of keep abreast on what's going on, because I know you're monitoring this and many other issues. We've been talking to Fred Burton. He's Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find them at stratfor.com. They're a geopolitical analytical firm that covers Mexico, they cover China, they cover Syria, they cover all the issues that's going on around the world. Thank you so much, Fred. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED. your source for federal news now.